So good afternoon. Today we're
going this to is WBUR. We interrupt here and now to bring you live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing from the State House.
We know we've asked a lot of the residents of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and we're very appreciative that everyone has done their part to stay home, social distance, and do without the special events, family gatherings, and the many other functions that used to define our day-to-day. The reason we're taking these measures is to flatten the curve of COVID-19, protect our friends and our families, and avoid steep spikes in cases that could overwhelm our healthcare system. Our goal is to prevent the spread and save as many lives as possible, especially for those vulnerable populations who become infected with this insidious disease. We've been working with the command center, with FEMA, with MEMA, our hospitals, and our medical advisory committee to put together a plan to address the Commonwealth's surge. We've estimated the impact of the surge through modeling that's based largely on Wuhan, China. But to paraphrase Dr. Ann Klebanski, the CEO of Partners Healthcare, who spoke here yesterday, these models are simply that, models. They may change, and they're not a perfect indicator of how this virus will impact our Commonwealth. So much depends on how much everyone stays home, practices good personal hygiene, and keeps their distance. Our models suggest that Massachusetts will hit surge sometime between today, April 10th, and April 20th. Data in recent days suggest the peak might be closer to April 20th. This is consistent with other publicly available models that are out there. And as new data comes in, we'll continue to assess our projections and make adjustments. Our model puts the peak around 2,500 new confirmed cases per day. Yesterday, we reported 2,100 new cases. If we do not see a flattening in the daily cases and in new hospitalizations, we may need to make some adjustments in our planning, and we will. At this time, we see evidence that we're still on the upward slope of this pandemic. For example, yesterday was our single biggest day for positive tests at 2,151. This partly reflects our active testing of hotspot nursing facilities, and we conducted well over 7,000 tests, which is a big increase for us. But yesterday was still the most confirmed positive test we've had on a single day to date. As I said on Wednesday, the percent of people testing positive has increased over the last few weeks. It reached a new high on Monday, which about 30% of all tests conducted were positive, and has remained high throughout the week, and despite the increase in tests. Yesterday, 29% of our tests were positive, even though we hit 7,000 tests overall. Unfortunately, we've also seen a continued growth in fatalities associated with this virus, with 70 new fatalities yesterday. Our case fatality rate is 2.7%, but it's growing. Still remains below the national average, about 3.5% in many European countries. For example, Italy, Spain, the Netherlands, UK, and France are all above 10%. Hospitalizations are also increasing. But we continue to believe that social distancing, staying home, shutting down non-essential services, and other measures that we and you have taken to flatten the curve are our best weapons against this pandemic. As we get into this projected surge, it's critically important that people heed our guidance and stay home as much as possible. I can't overemphasize how critical this is. Please stay home and only go out if you absolutely have to. If you need to go out, it should only be for the essential activities like going to the grocery store, the pharmacy, or checking in on a healthcare appointment. We urge you to remember to maintain social distancing guidelines or to cover your face or wear a mask if you cannot maintain a safe distance from other people. Today, we're issuing a Department of Public Health advisory that, consistent with the CDC guidance, recommends that people wear a mask or cover their face in public when they cannot safely socially distance. This protects you, from others and protects others from you. It works both ways. For example, we advise people to wear something to cover their face in public spaces and especially in places like supermarkets and pharmacies. If people need to go for a walk or a run, but they should certainly avoid group sports or anything where you're hanging out with lots of other people. That means no sitting around at the beach and no backyard cookouts with friends. If you go out, do what you have to do and go home. That's it. The first step in planning for the COVID-19 outbreak was assessing the capacity of the different levels of care in our existing hospital system statewide. We've been in contact with our hospitals on a daily basis to work on what we describe as a baseline capacity to support both ICU bed and acute bed needs. Our hospitals have done a tremendous job of maximizing their own capacity, but our projections have indicated that we need more beds, more staffed beds. That's why we've also been working to open new hospital care sites in all corners of the Commonwealth. Over the last several weeks, that work has accelerated. We've built out the Commonwealth's capacity significantly and for all types of patients. For example, COVID-19 can make elderly individuals or those with pre-existing conditions very sick, often requiring an ICU level of care. For others, COVID-19 may require hospitalization for a few days, but a less intensive level of care to keep the patient stable and comfortable as they recover. The plan we've put together accounts for different levels of care, and the concept that a patient may stay in an ICU bed in a hospital but become stable enough to move to an acute bed in a different setting in order to make that ICU bed available for somebody else was a big part of our planning. Even if we stay below our projections for confirmed diagnoses, we could still meet or exceed our projections for medical care if more people need hospitalization or stay longer in the hospital than anticipated. Some hospitals have seen a rapid increase in hospitalization rates in a short time. This is why surge planning is so important. The command centers work to make approximately 14,500 treatment beds available statewide. This comes from both hospitals building out their own capacity and by standing up field hospitals at places like the Boston Convention Center. Before this pandemic, 11,000 beds were readily available for ICU care and acute care in Massachusetts. This represents a breakdown of roughly 9,400 acute care beds and 1,500 ICU beds. In addition, through hospital surge planning and our field hospitals, we're bringing approximately 3,500 additional beds online for ICU care and acute care. This breaks down to approximately 2,500 new hospital beds coming online from hospital surge planning and 1,000 beds coming online through our field hospitals. To put a finer point on it, our current models have suggested that Massachusetts should have a target of 2,700 ICU beds available, with approximately 2,200 available for COVID patients. We'll continue to expand this capacity with our hospitals if necessary as we move forward. In the coming days, we'll have hundreds of new beds coming online that will help us significantly ramp up our capacity ahead of the surge to support our hospitals. We're targeting 5 alternative care sites or temporary hospitals. These field hospitals will serve as an alternative site for hospitals to treat patients, particularly individuals who need acute or less intensive care. They're being built or planned all around the state to ensure all of our residents have access to health care. Yesterday, we delivered an update on the BCEC site in Boston, which will open today. The DCU Center in Worcester also opened this week, and the Newton Pavilion in Boston started accepting patients yesterday. Over the coming week, we expect additional facilities to open up on the Cape and in Merrimack Valley, and we may have additional facilities available in Springfield at some point later on. All in, these facilities will provide approximately 1,000 additional beds for patients who do not require ICU level of care. As a message to the folks at home, if you're a patient experiencing a medical emergency, you should go to the nearest emergency room. But remember, if it's not an emergency, contact your healthcare provider before showing up at a healthcare facility. I've talked to many physicians over the course of the last several weeks, and they have taken full advantage, along with their patients, of our new telehealth benefit that's made available here in Massachusetts as a covered service to everybody. It is, in many respects, the fastest, quickest, and for you, and in many cases for your provider, the fastest way to engage in a conversation if you need to talk to your clinician. We're also instructing ambulances to follow their normal dispatching and triage protocols. Hospitals will stabilize patients and determine their best treatment course and site of care. This effort over the course of a few weeks will add hundreds and hundreds of new beds to our healthcare system and has not been an easy one. It takes a lot of planning and a ton of hard work and a lot of cooperation. We're very grateful to our federal partners and to the hospital systems at UMass Memorial, Partners Healthcare, Beth Israel Lahey, Cape Cod Hospital, Bay State Hospital, and Lowell General for their efforts to stand these up. These organizations and the doctors, nurses, and countless other workers are all stepping up big time, and we can't thank them enough. We're also monitoring the impact the virus is having in different regions and tracking how many beds are still available in each corner of the state. If there's a surge or a hot spot in one region, we'll have a plan in place to utilize hospital space or transport patients if we need to, depending on the level of care they require. Over the last few days, we have seen an increase in the number of hospitalizations. Our hospitals have reported that 8,100 beds are occupied now statewide, which is roughly 55% of capacity. This includes hospitalizations for non-COVID patients as well. That means we have about 6,400 available hospital beds for both ICU and acute care. That's roughly 45% of the total number of beds that are available right now. Thanks to everything we are all doing to stay home, practice good hygiene, and the incredible work of our medical community, capacity is manageable right now. But what we're seeing in the models predicts a big increase in cases in the weeks ahead. And that means our healthcare system will be stretched like never before. We will continue to engage with our healthcare community on a daily basis to monitor this number closely and keep the public informed with respect to capacity. And as we prepare for the surge, we're also chasing more PPE or personal protective equipment to keep our frontline health care workers safe and support patient needs. PPE remains a major challenge nationwide. We've been aggressively pursuing every avenue we can to make sure we have the gear that we need to protect our frontline workers as they battle the surge. We've made over 1,100 deliveries of over 2.6 million pieces of PPE to healthcare facilities, municipalities, and first responders since the outbreak began. And we'll keep working to get more into the hands of those on the front line that need it most. Healthcare workers, as everybody knows, are the front lines of the COVID-19 battle. As we grow our hospital capacity and stand up field hospitals, we need more healthcare workers to join those front lines. The command center set up an online portal called Mass Response, and we're currently seeking additional skilled volunteers to support the Commonwealth's efforts. So far, over 4,000 volunteers have signed up. Not a surprise, based on all we know about the people of the Commonwealth. But we could use more. Mass Response needs volunteers of all skill levels and backgrounds from both medical and non-medical professions. If you're a licensed or certified healthcare provider, a public health professional, a retiree, or an individual with an interest in helping your community, please visit the website, maresponse.org. We've also stood up a website posting employment opportunities for our temporary care sites and for our long-term care facilities at mass.gov/joincovidteam. This site will continually be updated with new job opportunities. In a minute, you all will hear from Kate Walsh, who's the CEO of Boston Medical Center, to share some thoughts on how her hospital is preparing for the surge. I do want to thank Kate and all of the Commonwealth's hospitals, their leaders, and their teams for being great partners with us and leaders in their communities. But before Kate comes up to the podium, I want to share one more thought with everyone today. I know this week and this weekend represent a challenging and complicated time for people of faith. The minister at our church always refers to this time of year as his Super Bowl. But not this year. For me, this will be the first Easter I haven't spent with either my mom or dad in at least 50 years. And I'm sure my dad and I will talk on the phone, but it will certainly not be the same. And it's cruel that at a time when we need hugs the most, staying apart is the most important thing that we can do for one another. This week, for our friends celebrating Easter and Passover, this week is about beating cruelty with love. We remember how to confront fear with faith. And regardless of whether you celebrate a holiday this week or not, we've all been doing a lot of that for the past few weeks, fighting a cruel force with love for one another and faith that what we do today will make tomorrow better. Now is not the time to give up or give in. Now is the time to help each other, to help the elderly, to help our frontline workers, to help those battling sickness. And we do that by sticking with what we know works and following through and staying together. And let me just close by saying, as I said at the beginning, please stay home. Look after one another and do all the things we've talked about, everything we can do to stop the spread. Thank you. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Kate Walsh from Boston Medical.
This is WBUR. You're listening to live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing.
Thank you, Governor Baker, and thank you, Secretary Sutters and Lieutenant Governor Polito. Boston Medical Center is very grateful to all of you for doing so much to flatten the curve. It is the most important thing we can do, and for also ensuring that every hospital has the information, the flexibility, and the resources to respond to this crisis. Your leadership, collaboration, and advocacy in Washington and across the Commonwealth have really been instrumental. We're particularly grateful at Boston Medical Center for the financial relief package, the infusion of funds that will ensure that hospitals, particularly safety net hospitals like ours, are here through this crisis and beyond for our patients and communities. BMC has already seen a dramatic drop in revenue, which is particularly tough for a place like ours. The governor's financial relief package will help bridge that gap over the next 3 months in communities all across our Commonwealth. So thank you, Governor Baker and Secretary Sutters. Now I'd like to update you on BMC's surge planning. When it became clear that Massachusetts would feel the impact of COVID-19, we knew that Boston Medical Center's patients, some of the most vulnerable in our region, would be hit the hardest. Many of our patients have to continue to work. They are essential workers. Cleaning buildings, preparing food, stocking shelves, loading trucks. They don't have the option of staying home. Many have pre-existing health conditions that put them at further risk. A large proportion of our patients live in multi-generational housing, and some are homeless. BMC quickly mobilized, first, to reorganize our campus to maximize capacity for COVID-19 patients, and second, to reduce the risk to the most vulnerable, the homeless people amongst us, and increase access to care for everyone. We immediately canceled all elective surgeries and routine ambulatory activity. We created a clinic to screen and test patients with flu-like symptoms. We converted beds across the hospital to almost double our ICU capacity and expand our medical surgical bed capacity for COVID-19 patients. We've repurposed endoscopy suites and post-operative recovery space. We transferred our pediatric inpatients to Boston Children's Hospital, thank you, and as a result, we have a number of adult patients in some brightly colored rooms. These steps, along with really hard work to assure appropriate staffing and to secure much-needed supplies, especially PPE, have allowed us to flex up significantly to meet demand. And as expected, BMC's volume began to surge earlier than other hospitals, leading us last Sunday to transfer some of our more stable ICU patients to other hospitals so we would have space to admit new patients. Thankfully, that was a one-day phenomenon, but it strengthened my resolve and that of my colleagues who run hospitals in Boston to put even more focus on coordination and to come together as a system of providers to maximize resources and save lives. One factor in the high volume BMC is seeing is for all the reasons I mentioned earlier. This virus is hitting certain racial and ethnic groups harder. At our hospital, 80% of our COVID-19 patients are Black or Hispanic, compared to about 58% normally. That's why the kind of support we're getting from Governor Baker and Mayor Walsh and their teams is really critical. We have to fight this virus both inside our hospitals, but also outside the walls of our hospital, so we can make absolutely certain that access to COVID-19 care is equitable across all racial and ethnic groups. We also need to make sure we're doing everything we can to bend the curve across all racial and ethnic groups. And we've produced material encouraging social distancing in 10 languages, and we're working with Mayor Walsh, the Boston delegation, Boston City Council, and community hospitals, community partners to get the word out. And Secretary Sutters and her team are helping us get the word out across the Commonwealth. Another major focus of our work is scaling up to meet the specific needs of the homeless population. Thanks to Governor Baker and Secretary Sutter's leadership, we're partnering with Boston Healthcare for the Homeless, Pine Street Inn, other shelters, the City of Boston Shelter System, to reopen the East Newton Pavilion to accommodate homeless patients. And I'm pleased to report that we welcomed our first 20 guests last night. We're hopeful that with continued strict social distancing, these efforts, in tandem with the parallel processes at other hospitals, will allow us to both reduce demand and rise up to meet it. In the days ahead, BMC will keep executing our surge plan and building out additional capacity. I want to end on an optimistic note. So far, to knock wood, Boston Medical Center's plan is working well and we're keeping pace, although we know we are not out of the woods. The effort I've seen at our hospital, and one that I know is being replicated at every hospital across our state, has been nothing short of extraordinary. I truly believe that Massachusetts, with the leader of the Baker administration, and Boston, with the leadership of Mayor Walsh, combined with the expertise and empathy of our incredible healthcare teams and strict social distancing practiced by everyone, I'm hopeful that we can beat the odds on this. Thank you.
This is WBUR. You're listening to live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing at the State House.
And for being a premier Boston safety net hospital. Governor, Lieutenant Governor, thank you. Good afternoon. So just a couple of updates to augment what the governor has said. So specifically on ventilators. We have distributed 109 ventilators across 19 sites throughout the state. As you know, we received a distribution of 100 from the federal government, and then we had 4 from Medtronic, and 5 were donated, as the governor said yesterday, from Boston Children's Hospital. We received another from the stockpile that we're now testing to ensure that they work, and they will be allocating them today. I'll be reviewing the inventory shortly for distribution tomorrow. In addition, we were informed last evening that the governor's advocacy on behalf of the Commonwealth has been successful and that we are to receive another 200 sometime next week. So we received notice that we're getting them. My attitude about this is until they're in the stockpile, we don't count them, but we have received notice that we should receive another 200 early next week. Update on our mobile testing program. As you know, because you've heard me say this before, the command center has been accelerating on-site testing and made resources available, particularly to our long-term care facilities, to prioritize the safety of our most vulnerable residents. Since launching the initiative, more than 27 tests have been collected from about 150 facilities. Today, the National Guard is visiting another 20 locations throughout the state. Yesterday, I announced that the program expanded to include assisted living residences and that for nursing facilities can now request to receive test kits to perform the sample collection, rather than having the National Guard specialist perform the testing on site. So a facility may order test kits for the entire facility, both symptomatic and asymptomatic residents and employees. Today, I'm pleased to announce that we actually started a partnership with the largest EMS provider in New England, and we're now doing mobile testing at some of our very vulnerable group homes for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Transformative Healthcare will visit congregate settings and test our residents for COVID-19. This partnership helps us provide access to timely testing for individuals with disabilities across the Commonwealth without them having to leave their homes for testing. It's very important for our safety net. And just an update on our nursing home call line. As we have said, it really reiterates how the governor ended his remarks. I think one of the hardest decisions I made was in recommending that we stop visitation to long-term care nursing homes and assisted living residences, knowing that at the time when we most want comfort from loved ones, that I was restricting access of love and comfort and hugs to families. So we strongly encourage long-term care facilities to maintain open communication with the families of all of their residents about COVID-19 and how it impacts their facilities and the individuals who live in their assisted living residences, rest homes, and nursing homes. We recognize that communicating with families during this unprecedented public health emergency is crucial, particularly, as I said, since visitation has been so restricted. Improved communication is a key reason why we created a dedicated family resource line specifically for families with concerns. Our nursing home facility resource line, a dedicated phone line to connect family members with the information resources they need, has spoken with over 1,000 people since we launched on Monday. We encourage families and community members who have questions about the nursing home or rest home care their loved one is receiving during the COVID-19 outbreak to utilize this resource. It's available 7 days a week, and that number is 617-660-5399. With that, I'll turn it back to the governor.
Questions for any of us?
Governor, why now did you decide to issue the DPH advisory regarding the face coverings? Why not earlier? And also, will you now reconsider a curfew?
So we issued it because we reviewed the guidance over the course of the week. We talked to a lot of our colleagues in the healthcare world and in local government, and decided based on the feedback we got from them that the guidance was the right thing to do. I said when the guidance was issued by the CDC on Sunday, it's either Saturday or Sunday of last week, that I thought the guidance made a lot of sense. And I said specifically, if you're gonna be in a grocery store or a pharmacy or some other place where you can't socially distance, you should wear a mask because it protects you from others, but it also protects others from you. And the fundamental reason I think this is important as we go forward is the growing body of evidence that is significant. It's a minority as a percent of the total, but a significant minority of the population that becomes infected with COVID-19 never becomes symptomatic, which makes that particularly important. And while I'm not happy about the fact I can't see my dad either, it's that invisibility that comes with this particular virus in a significant number of people that makes this issue associated with visitation in long-term care facilities so important. Because you could very well be a carrier and have absolutely no idea. And that's why that mask or that face covering is important, not just to protect you from others, but also to protect others from you.
And will you be reconsidering the curfew, any sort of curfew?
We've said many times that people should stay home. Stay home. And we've seen a dramatic drop in mobility over the course of the past several weeks. If local communities want to recommend that people not be out at night in their communities, they are free to do that under our guidance.
As we get closer to the surge, though, would you reconsider imposing a mandatory stay-at-home? It might just be for a week or two as we go through the surge.
Everybody in Massachusetts knows they should stay at home, everyone. And we've seen it in the data over and over again. We've seen it in the polling. We've seen it on the streets. We've seen it pretty much everywhere. And in the places where we haven't seen it, we've acted on it. It's why we changed the guidelines with respect to grocery stores and pharmacies. It's part of why we're talking today about face coverings and masks if you can't socially distance. And it's the main reason we decided to ban parking at many of our, at all of our beaches, and it's why we talked to some of our colleagues in a number of communities about shutting down their parkways, our parkways, their parkways this weekend, to make more space available for people to walk.
Well, if the model is flawed or incorrect and the surge is worse than you anticipate, you said you'd readjust the plans if that were the case. Vaguely, what does that mean broadly if we do need a significant number of beds that aren't available? What are the additional emergency procedures you could adjust those plans to?
Well, keep in mind that the BCEC is a really big place. And we put 1,000 beds up there. You could put a lot more if you had to. And remember that the BCEC basically got built out in 5 days. I think the DCU Center got built out in about 5 days. The Joint Base Cape Cod got built out in about 5 days. And they can expand too. So, I mean, they're... You can add capacity in a pretty big hurry, but part of the reason why we're talking about continuing to grow our community of potential volunteers and skilled clinicians and healthcare workers is in case we need them to deal with issues like that. The build-out itself will probably be the part we can do quickest. The piece we got to make sure we figure out is the staff.
This is WBUR. You're listening to live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's coronavirus briefing at the State House.
Well, there's a lot of tasks that are what I would describe as operational that a lot of different people could satisfy. And many of the tasks associated especially with folks who are in a lower level of care, the support activities associated with that, fall into what I would call sort of the orderly category, and there's a lot of people who could be trained to do that.
Governor, a grocery store worker in Salem died of COVID, and Congressman Bolton is calling on the state to maybe provide more PPEs to grocery store frontline workers. Are you considering that? And are you considering maybe opening up some of these drive-through testing that are open right now to just first responders, also grocery stores?
So the current sites that are open for first responders and emergency medical personnel. And a big part of the reason why we changed our guidance on grocery stores generally and went to the 40% occupancy number and a few of the other elements we did there was specifically to protect not just the people in the grocery store, but the people who work there. And obviously our grocery store workers, the folks working in pharmacies, the folks working on the public transportation system. There are a lot of folks doing a lot of really important jobs out there. And DCF workers who are out visiting families. And I think one of the things we're going to talk about is whether we can figure out a way to enhance our testing capability for others too. So, first of all, everything associated with what happened at Holyoke, a soldier's home, is tragic. And a big part of the reason why, within sort of 48 hours of learning about it, the lieutenant governor and I and the secretary moved to hire an independent investigator was because we wanted answers. And within 12 hours of learning about it, we had folks on the ground there, Valitech and others, to stabilize the situation and to deal with many of the issues that needed to be dealt with for both residents and for staff. And I want to say at this point how much we appreciate the work that was done by Holyoke Medical Center to step up and basically create within 72 hours a COVID facility for COVID-infected residents of the Soldiers' Home at Holyoke Medical Center. And I also want to give a big shout-out to the National Guard, who came in literally the following morning and brought not just active-duty guards people, but also brought medical personnel to support the work that we were doing there to stabilize the place. We started our investigation because we want answers, okay? And I think the... I think the U.S. Attorney's investigation, he sits in a position where Remember, the entity that does the survey work for the soldiers' homes is the VA, which is a federal entity. So I certainly believe that he's got a position there where a review would be appropriate if he deemed it as such, and we welcome his participation there.
Did the state provide adequate medical care to those veterans?
Well, clearly, by the time our folks, by the time Val and the team showed up there, the place had real problems, and that was obviously demonstrated by what everybody saw there on the ground on Monday. And that's why we're doing the investigation. And by the way, it's why so many things have happened over the course of the past, is that 5 days ago? Yeah, over the course of the past five, was it 5 days or 10, or 12 days ago? It's all one day. I think that's part of the reason why so much has been done over the course of the past 12 days to stabilize the situation and the circumstances for the residents and the staff. Yeah.
Okay. What is your reaction to the lawsuit brought by representatives of the
So I've answered this question many times with respect to why we made the decision we made. I believe we made the right decision, and I don't speak to questions that are currently before the court. Signed it already. And thank the legislature for getting it done.
Sorry. Do you have a sense of how many people have died at nursing facilities, other facilities across the state? Is it a large percentage of the total?
Well, the person who would have been best equipped to answer that just left. So
she hasn't been answering that question for 3 days. So I'm trying to find out
Remember, we provide that we provide most of the information around death certificates goes to the local boards of health, and they are, for all intents and purposes, the keepers of most of that data. And we've made clear to them that they can make information in their communities available. With respect to what the DPH actually collects from the locals, I'll have to get back to you on that one. We are about to enter what will probably be the most difficult period we are going to face in dealing with this particular virus at this particular time. Period. Our energies, our focus, our efforts, and our daily work are about making sure that our healthcare community and our service community, social service, first responders, shelter providers, all the rest, have the capacity and the staff that they need to ensure that we do everything we can on behalf of the people who are going to find their way into the shelter or the healthcare system over the course of the next several weeks. Any plan associated with what happens after that is going to be based on the facts on the ground and a tremendous amount of guidance that will need to come from public health experts and others about testing and tracing and other elements of what, you know, a so-called safe reopening could look like. But I don't want people to get ahead of themselves on this one, okay? We are about to have a very difficult couple of weeks here in Massachusetts, and it could be 3 weeks and it could be four, depending upon how this whole thing plays out. People have put a ton of work into preparing for this. so that we do everything we can to make sure that not only are we able to serve the people who are going to be dealing with COVID-19, but that we are able to make sure our healthcare system can continue to take care of the people who have the incidents and the illnesses and the heart attacks and everything else that happen every single day in Massachusetts. One of the biggest challenges other countries have faced when they've gone through the surge is not just managing the surge itself, but the impact that surge has on its ability to actually service people who have solvable problems who can't get taken care of. Our goal is to make sure that we get enough capacity in place that we can continue to do the things we've always done on behalf of people when they needed it and take care of people who are dealing with COVID as part of the surge. That's our focus, that should be our focus, and that should be what people in Massachusetts are thinking about. If you're looking for something to pray for this weekend, you should be praying for the families and the neighbors and the friends who are going to be working their way through this surge over the next several weeks, whether they are healthcare workers or patients or hospital leaders or just folks in the community who are volunteering to step up and help with some of the ancillary issues associated with food or shelter or whatever it might be. We'll start talking about other stuff eventually, but the focus right now really needs to be on what's right in front of us. And what's right in front of us is going to be a very difficult few weeks in managing something that's never happened before here in Massachusetts.
This is WBUR. You're listening to live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing at the State House.
Yeah, I mean, I said before, I don't like making decisions on small pieces of data. But if you look at the sort of way these lines go, right, if you succeed, what you do is you take a line that looks like that in terms of hospitalizations and cases, and you turn it into a line that looks more like this, right? Now, if you take a line that goes more like this, one of the things that potentially happens with it is it moves out a little bit and comes down a little farther out than you might have expected it to. And there's some indication that our line is kind of trending in that direction. But it's good, but it basically means, once again, that the focus for the time being really needs to be on dealing with what's directly in front of us. And we'll get around to talking about the other stuff. What we're doing, I mean, part of what the Secretary Sutter's talked about was, I think there are about 100, and there are roughly 1,000 senior care facilities of one kind or another in Massachusetts. If you count the assisted living facilities and the nursing homes and the elder care facilities, it's about 1,000. There are about 140 of them that have at least one case of COVID-19. And that mobile testing unit has been to almost all of them. And it typically goes to when a facility tells us that they either believe they have a case or they have a case, that mobile testing unit shows up and tests everybody who's had close contact with the individuals who are involved, turns it around in 24 hours, and then works with the epidemiologists at DPH to give the facility and infectious control people to give the facility guidance on how to deal with it at that point going forward. It's been a fairly successful tool at helping facilities manage this sort of thing. First, I've heard of that from a community level. But if they have the testing capability available, and that's the best way they believe to put it to work, that's certainly an option.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a nice weekend. Well, I'll probably see you tomorrow.